Good morning, members. I'd like to call the Environmental Resources Policy and Finance Committee to order. Today's date is Tuesday, February 7th. First order of business, members, is the minutes. The minutes are before us. Representative Eklund, would you move the minutes, please?
Mr. Chair, I move the minutes from last meeting, February 7th.
February 7th. Yep, thank you. Thank you. Any additions or corrections to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Minutes are approved. Thank you, members. Next, we have a technical fix that we have to do on House File 586, which was the Representative Draskowski's bill that was before us on Tuesday. We inadvertently sent that to a tax committee, and we need to send it to Legacy. So I'd like to move to reconsider the re-referral of House File 586 to the Committee on Taxes for the purpose of instead of referring the bill to Legacy. Okay, so Representative Hansen and I, we texted on this yesterday a little bit, so here's discussion time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and we're inclined to support the motion. I just wanted to see, did Legacy request it, or was it a...
Oh. No, it was just... It was an administrative mistake that happens seldom, if ever.
Okay. And he hadn't had
And we accept responsibility for that. So
we like that personal responsibility, just like you guys do.
Yeah,
so we would support that. We'd support the motion.
Thank you. So, members, any further discussion on the motion to reconsider the re-referral of House File 586? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. The motion is passed. Now, members, the bill is before the committee again. And so what I would like to do is move that House File 585, as amended, be recommended to referral to the Legacy Funding Finance Committee. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you, members. Now we have before us House File 434. And I'd like to move that House File 434 be recommended to be re-referred to Ways and Means Committee. This is the wetland replacement bill. We do have some people here to testify on behalf of the bill. We've put a lot of work into this, we recognize the fact that the wetland replacement bank is in need of some infusion of cash to get the construction season started this year. And some people who are a lot smarter than I am can go into the details of this, but this is an important thing. I know that we're all pretty committed to getting this done so that county road projects and so forth can proceed across the state of Minnesota this spring when the frost leaves the ground, which I'm not sure when that's going to be in Roseau County. It was 33 degrees below zero up there the night before last, so plus the wind chill. So, yep. So then, in order to get the bill into shape that I would like, I've got the DE2 amendment in your packet. So I would like to move the DE2 amendment. All those in favor of that signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted. So now we have the bill in the order in which I would like. We have some people here to testify on the importance of the bill. So with that, would you please identify yourselves for the records and proceed with the explanation of the bill and your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members.
Morning.
Angie Becker-Kadelka, Assistant Director with the Board of Water and Soil Resources.
And I'm Dave Wires, also Assistant Director with the Board of Water and Soil Resources.
Thank you very much. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, we're here today to provide an overview of the program and the current status that it sits. We all know the functions that wetlands provide. They slow down water by acting as a sponge. They filter contaminants, and they let pollutants settle out. The Wetlands Conservation Act, enacted in 1991, adopted the state policy of no net loss for wetlands due to the amount of wetlands that were lost across the state. The local roads replacement program was created in statute in 1996. The program requires that the state of Minnesota, through Bowser, is responsible for replacing wetlands lost to certain local government authority road functions. So, for example, if a local road authority, like a county or a township, wants to widen a road, and widening that road impacts the wetland, they report that to the state, and then the state is responsible for mitigating that wetland. It's worked really well for 20 years. The local government road authorities are offered something that is more efficient permitting for them. It's a more streamlined process. And for the state, it offers higher quality functioning wetlands. Instead of replacing wetlands, you know, right in the road where it's been disturbed, or right of ways where they've been disturbed, it allows the state to create larger wetlands, grouping them together, creating better functioning ecologically.
Ms. Chair and members of the committee, what this slide shows you is the recent funding history of the local road program, and this is really what's precipitated the legislation that's before you today. Is the fact that going back at least to 2010, the amount of funding that's been provided through legislative appropriations that have been typically bond funds have been less than half of what the request has been. This has resulted in the reduced generation of wetland credits. So it's gotten to the point now where we do not have adequate credits to comply with the statutory requirement to provide the mitigation for eligible local road projects. The program is managed on the basis of bank service areas, as we call them. They are essentially basin areas across the state. These areas are recognized for managing wetland replacement, both under the Wetland Conservation Act as well as under the Clean Water Act Section 404 program. It's important to understand the geography in which you manage it, because one of the key ways that we've been trying to stay compliant with our requirement to provide the mitigation is we've taken credits from one bank service area to provide mitigation impacts in another bank service area. Now, the reason why that's important is that once you cross those boundaries, you are placing at a higher ratio. We are burning through the credits at a higher rate, and we're in fact doing that. Via a board action this past October, the Bowser Board adopted a management plan where we are no longer doing that due to the fact that the credits have gotten so low that it's no longer seen prudent to continue that practice. So via, again, a board-adopted plan, we are now managing the credits only on a bank service area by bank service area base. We are not crossing boundaries in any further due to that increased burn rate of our increasingly short supply of wetland credits. And, in fact, we are in the process of closing wetland bank service areas to replacement for local road projects. And in fact, this past December 2nd, we were out of credits in bank service area 4, which is Lower Red River, as we call them in our system as of December 2nd. That also coincided with bank service area 6, which is the St. Clair River. Those were both closed effective December 2nd. And then we also provided notice in January for effective February 2nd that Bank Service Area 9, which is Minnesota River, also we're out of credits there, we have closed them. And actually what you see here in front of you is that this actually is a soon-to-be out-of-date map, because we are in the process of providing notice that Bank Service Area 7, the central Mississippi area, is also going to be closed. We'll be publishing a notice in the State Register on Monday about a 30-day notice of the closure. So effective March 15th, we also will no longer be providing wetland mitigation for Bank Service Area 7, as well as we are out of credits in that area as well, too. So it's becoming a bit of a snowball effect as this thing goes forward, making it really very critical that additional funding be provided.
So, Mr. Irons, excuse me for interrupting. We have a couple of questions. Mm-hmm. And just for the knowledge, especially some of our newer people, when you talk about wetland credits, what is the unit that goes along with that?
Mr. Chair, the wetland credit unit, it is based upon both land measurement in terms of an acre, but it's also the amount of restoration that, in fact, occurs. Certain actions will generate a higher amount of wetland credit. So if you're, that example being, if it's a completely drained wetland that's being restored, that will often get 100% credit. So that will get you 1 acre of restored fully drained wetland will get you 1 acre credit. But if you're, all you're doing is restoring part of the benefits, you get a lower share of the wetland credit. So it's a combination of land area as well as the amount of restoration that occurs on the site.
Thank you. Representative Neuberger, and then Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question for the folks back home as we try to explain this. If you build a road and you eliminate a portion of wetland, so what you're talking about then is that you are going to restore or you're going to recreate new wetland in order to offset what you're replacing here or what your construction. So my question is, if you have a road project, let's say in Cook County, where does the restoration, could it be anywhere in the state, or does it have to be in the district that the construction is located in, or does it have to be in the county that the construction is located in? Where does the replacement land have to be?
There's, Mr. Chairman, there are a couple ways to explain that in terms of the way the system, in fact, works. The Wetland Conservation Act divides the state into three pre-settled wetland areas. That's the first thing to be aware of. There's a greater than 80%, think of the primarily northeast 40% of the state. There's 50 to 80%, that's a band in the center. And then there's a less than 50%, that's the western and southern parts of the state. The way the law works is that impacts in the less than 80% part of the state cannot be replaced in a greater than 80% part of the state. That's the first thing. However, the greater than 80% can go anywhere in the state. So we're trying to acknowledge the fact there's a lot of wetlands still remaining in that northeast part of the state, and we try to acknowledge that with the way the law is, in fact, structured. So if you are in Cook County, well, the other thing to be mindful of, too, is that that's where the state law operates. We also provide wetland replacement, what's required under the Clean Water Act Section 404 program as well by this. So by the wetland replacement, we're covering both state and federal wetland replacement requirements. And their rules on mitigation are not quite the same as ours. They're very close, but not quite identical. So we need to be mindful of that as well, too. The main issue up in Cook County, though, the way it would work is you would first always want to look within that as close as possible. If there's mitigation in the county, we try and do that in the watershed. But as a matter of law, it's required only in the bank service area. So that Lake Superior, that blue area you see in the map, is where we would first look. But from there, if we don't have credits, we would then look at adjacent bank service areas until we could, in fact, find both the appropriate amount and wetland type to match the impact that's been reported to us.
Representative Neuberger.
Thank you for your detailed explanation. So the simple answer is that, yes, you could put it basically anywhere. You could take it from one spot and reclaim it technically anywhere else in the state, technically.
Mr. Chairman, if you're in Cook County, that it would be technically correct. If you're other parts of the state, that would not be correct.
Thank you. Director Wyrens, when you talk about the less than 80%, we're talking about 80% of what?
That is a very good question, Mr. Chair. We're referring to, in the law, a way of providing for differing application of the regulations to acknowledge historical wetland loss that's occurred since statehood. There's a study done back in the early 80s that looked at the amount of wetlands that are remaining at the time as it relates to the pre-settlement time. So it's a pre-settlement wetlands that are in existence, what we're referring to. And this analysis did have effect. It did demonstrate, again, in the western parts of the state and in the southern, I mean, agriculture of the state, there's been a higher degree of wetland loss as compared to what historically would have been there. And then as you go to the northeast, the amount of pre-settlement wetlands that are remaining increases.
Thank you. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you just define for me what you mean when you say the area is closed?
Director Wyrens.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, what it means is that if a local road authority comes in with a otherwise eligible project that we should provide mitigation for under the law, we will not be doing that. We'll be communicating with that county, city, or township that they would need to go look into the private marketplace, because there is a private wetland banking system that they could buy those credits from, or they'd have to create their own wetlands for those impacts as well. We are saying that we will not provide the wetland replacement in those bank service areas because we do not have the credits to do so.
Representative Clark.
Thank you.
And Director Irons, what's the cost difference between a private wetland bank and the state wetland bank?
Well,
per
for
unit.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the dollar value does vary quite a bit across the state. The main determinant of the cost of wetland credits is land values, as you might imagine. But the cost of the fact range from, we see anywhere from $10,000 to $15,000 in the northern part of the state where land values tend to be lower, to $80,000 plus in the metro area is not uncommon as well. I mean, it's that kind of a range that exists across the state.
And members, just one of the things that I've talked about, I have people in my area that, you know, one instance, for example, a person purchases a small piece of property, say 40 acres, and the land there is worth $800 an acre or something like that, and then they have an easement to gain access to the land, and they start doing some work with the track hole and going to build a driveway, and the next thing you know, they're buying wetland credits that cost them $15,000 to $18,000 an acre. And one of the things that I've tried to have discussions with about people is how do we reduce the cost of some of these and get them more proportional to the actual value of the land. Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, you talked about local unit governments be able to create their own wetland banks. What's the approximate amount of time for them to create a wetland bank in reference to this upcoming construction season?
Director Wyers.
The timeline to generate or to do restoration, you know, to generate wetland credits, it can be a lengthy period of time. If you're going into the wetland banking process where you're creating a typically a large area that you're restoring to generate wetland credits that you can reserve for future needs or to sell, as the case might be, you know, that kind of process to actually get the site selected, to get the approvals both at the from the local government under the Wetland Conservation Act as well as through the Army Corps of Engineers, that process can take in excess of a year to a year and a half to get all those approvals. Then they have to actually do the restoration work, and once they've certified they've done the restoration, in most cases they can get an initial deposit of wetland credits. The amount is typically 15% of the total area that they can receive. You know, a typical timeline is anywhere between, you know, a very simple project, it can be done within actually a year, but anywhere from a year to 2 to 2.5 years before that first deposit is sort of what that range looks like under that sort of a setting.
Representative Eklund.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And in regards to that, when I was first on the county board in Coochin County, we started about 6 years ago on an 80-acre wetland bank. They still don't have the credits.
It's not complicated. Representative Green, I see a smile on your face.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome.
To either one of the testifiers, is there anything within the law that would have stated or would have been put in there that said there's going to reach a point when we don't need to do this anymore? And if we're in areas where we're at 80% and there's no place else to go, is there anything that says this is enough, we've reached it?
Mr. Chair, members, the law states no net loss of wetlands, and so in following that, the state is the local roads program law states that the state is simply mandated to replace credits as they come into us. That's
Representative Green. In your opinion, as you've studied these, do you think that it would be a good idea to put into law that when we reach a certain point, that there's really no advantage to taking more?
Director Kadalka.
Mr. Chair and Representative Green, I think the folks that are more technically sound than I would be able to answer the question better, and our job is really to implement the law as it stands and as it sits, and so that the law has been passed that says no net loss of wetlands, and then that's what we focus on, and we focus on that historically Minnesota has lost between 50 to 90% in different parts of the state, and so that our job is to implement the law that says we are not to have any sort of net loss of those.
Representative Green.
And then, thank you, Mr. Chair. And then, so another question then. If I, as a local official, am I doing my road, mm-hmm. and I had to repair it, and when I'm done, I put it back, and I maybe have lost 6 inches by widening the road, what does, do I have to replace then that 6 inches, or do I have to replace a whole impacted area?
Director Kudelka. Or Director White.
Mr. Chairman, and the way the law works, again, both under state and federal laws, is that in that case, you know, for the county, they would have to identify the amount of wetland that's been filled in that case, and report that as a wetland loss. And depending upon the amount of that, you know, under state law, we replace all the impact. We don't reduce any amount. There is the ability, actually, if the impact is small enough under a general permit that the St. Paul District of the Corps of Engineers has on place, there's possible to actually, you know, not have to have mitigation required for very small amounts of impact. But the amount has to be documented for state purposes, for sure, and again, depending upon the amount for federal as well.
Representative Green. And I understand that. And my question is getting to the point that we are expanding our wetlands greatly. We are requiring our road authorities to take very much needed transportation dollars to not only replace the impacted area, but to return the area to the way it was before we started. And so we're constantly struggling looking for transportation dollars for a crumbling road system. And I think that we really need to look at the reclamation part of this could be used for the wetland banking. If you're putting it back the way that it was, then there's really no reason to go buy sometime in some areas 2-for-1. You know, this is going to have to stop somewhere. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is kind of a follow-up to our earlier question on the credits themselves. As I was hearing that it takes a while to get these credits. Seeing that there are a number of areas that are closed, once the money is available, how long is it going to take to build up these credits? What's the timeline on some of this? Because I know there's road projects waiting to get going.
Director.
Mr. Chairman, the part of the benefit of the legislation that the chair is proposing, by pricing general fund dollars, we can use those to buy existing wetland bank credits. There are, the wetland banking system is a way to for landowners to drive additional income to restore wetland areas and to sell the wetland credits. You know, it indicated what the value of those wetland credits are. I mean, they are sold on a square foot basis is the way it works and within the system. And we would use those funds to buy the wetland credits from existing private bankers to make sure that those road projects could go forward because they had the mitigation in hand at that point in time.
Representative Fisher. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, often we have the discussion about costs and don't talk about the benefits. And thinking back, wetlands do have a value, a benefit for the state. And I think we actually have court history on that going back to the early 60s or late 60s, maybe the 70s. I remember, I think the case was in Freeborn County, a few miles from where I grew up, where a road was going to be put in and it had to be moved. And the road had to be moved, and the court found prior to that, wetlands were referred to as swampland or wasteland, no value, just something to be filled in, something to get through or go over or to remove. But then that case said that they had a value that needed to be protected. There was a value, a benefit in a wetland being a wetland. And I think that's been kind of the foundation for over 50 years of where we've gone on that. And when we talk about penalty, or this is a difficulty, or it's a cost for the state or for a local government who represents people, we're looking at the dollars and not the overall benefit. And there is an overall economic benefit as well to wetlands. This bill we talked about on the floor, Mr. Chair, I think the governor had more money in it because we're having to mitigate the failure of last year having a no bonding bill. We're having to come back here and find some money, general fund, and I think the original bill before the DE2 had bonding. Could you maybe let us know what the actual proposal was, what the need is from the governor?
Director.
Mr. Chair, members, so the governor's proposal has $10 million of bonding. That is what we right now calculate as our biennial need is $10 million. But because we've had to close these bank service areas, there's a $5.1 million general fund in addition to that as a catch-up. And that will simply allow us, as Assistant Director Wyron said, to buy some existing credits and start to reopen those bank service areas in the short term.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you.
Proceed, please.
Well, Mr. Chairman, actually, that last question was the last slide in our presentation, so if there are any further questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Okay, next up to testify is Kent Sulem and Keith Carlson. Would you come down, please? And then after that, we've got Fran Myron and Rick West and Don Arnosky, and then if there's anybody else who would wish to testify on the bill, make sure you let us know.
Good work. Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Keith Carlson. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association. I'm here today to testify in support of House File 431. I did want to start by indicating that this bill is supported by our organization, Minnesota Intercounty Association, that consists of 10 greater Minnesota regional center counties and 4 suburban counties here in the metro area. By the Minnesota Association of Townships, that is represented by Mr. Sulem, by the League of Minnesota Cities, Minnesota County Engineers Association, and the Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus. I'm going to go through and give you some further background on what the local road wetland replacement program is, and I will try and not be redundant on what was done here. Really, this program was created in the context of the state's Wetlands Conservation Act, whose major tenet is no net loss in wetlands. Integral to the policy of that is the 2-for-1 replacement ratio that exists in most of the state, the less than 80% of its pre-settlement wetlands areas of the state, and it does not apply to agricultural land, in which case the replacement requirement is generally 1-for-1. As has been indicated by Bowser, we abide by that policy either by constructing wetland replacement our wetlands ourselves, or we purchase wetlands credits. Now, in the early days of the Wetlands Conservation Act, basically local governments, frankly, revolted against the unfunded mandate inherent in the program. We all are road authorities. That's one of the main services that we provide, and this has created a major cost for us, given the significant wet areas in the state. To stem the objections, in 1996, the legislature came up with the object of this bill, the Local Road Wetland Replacement Program. And its basic tenet was to excuse local road authorities, townships, cities, and counties from our obligations to replace the wetlands that were impacted by our construction projects on existing roads when we were reconstructing them to meet current safety and design standards. To the extent we construct new roads or add lanes to existing roads, we still have to pay the entire tab for that. Okay, Bowser already went through why we're here, because of the underfunding that's occurred over several bienniums for this program. As has also been indicated, Bowser has been managing this underfunding in several ways. They have been borrowing credits from MnDOT that operates its own systems of wetlands banks. They can no longer do that and, in fact, have to pay that back. and also by trading credits across the geography that consists of these 10 wetlands bank service areas. Effective December 1st, Bowser said they would no longer do the latter policy. They would not trade credits across the bank service areas boundaries. And basically said, as the credits were exhausted in each bank service area, they would no longer meet the requirements of state law to provide the replacements for the wetlands impacted by our safety and design projects on existing roadways. To date, that's affected bank service areas 4, 6, and 9, and now, as the agency indicated, bank service area 7 will be closed. That's the entire metropolitan area stretching on up to St. Cloud, with the exception of the southern portions of Dakota County. It now encompasses, this slide has about 51 counties. We're now up to nearly 60 counties with the closing of bank service area 60. The effect of this policy change is basically to shut down construction projects in the affected counties. Again, I want to emphasize we're using counties as a terms of geography. It may be a township project that's shut down, it may be a city project, or it may be a county project. The time of the announcement of this this change in policy was too late for any local government to increase its property tax levies to offset the loss of the state dollars. So, frankly, our only way to deal with it is to engage in a rob Peter, pit to pay Paul type strategy, where we could delay one project that was previously scheduled to come up with the additional dollars to fund the other project. In terms of what it takes to fix this, again, the agency's gone through it. It takes $10 million to recapitalize the wetlands banks, and in the interim, until credits are actually available, because of the lag between when the money comes and how long it takes to construct, revegetate, and get those new wetlands banks to the point where they're functioning, they also need $5 million to go out and purchase wetland credits on the open market. As you know, Governor Dayton's budget includes both these items, and the combination of House File 434 and 431 also contain this money. I just want to emphasize this has been a legal obligation for the state for over 20 years. And one of the provisions in House File 431 has amended by the DE2 amendment says if you can't come up with the money to do this, and there will be a time lag regardless of how soon we get the money, we need some regulatory relief as well. That regulatory relief is, one, to reinstate the former policy of allowing trading of credits between the bank services areas, and secondly, to comport the state policy with the federal policy that certain smaller areas are not subject to the wetlands replacement requirement. Failure to act immediately, at least on this regulatory relief and the $5 million, means, you know, it obviously affects us as local road authorities and our citizens in that these projects will not be built. But more, as importantly, it affects our private contractors. We generally don't do this. We contract them to the private sector. Those jobs won't occur. The injection of dollars into our local economies won't occur. And the wages that would be paid to their employees won't be paid. I want to emphasize the planning for the construction season is happening right now. We're doing our final right-of-way acquisition. We're putting out bids and awarding the bids, and we're doing final permits. All that's on hold. If we don't have an answer to this problem by late this month or early in March, basically we're going to lose the construction season. You know, with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll conclude. Again, I want to thank Representative Fabian and Representative Nornes for carrying these bills. I also want to thank the agency. They have worked with us on this issue. They gave us notice in October about this and have provided plenty of information to assist us in coming up with a solution to this problem.
Thank you. Mr. Sewell. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kent Sewell. I'm General Counsel and Director of Governmental Relations of the Minnesota Association of Townships, and I am here to also support this bill as amended. It is a critical piece of legislation, and the timing is also very important so there's not a lost construction season. There's a little side issue for townships on this, and that is we have a provision in the contracting law that allows us that if we have a similar comparable project to a county, we can work with the contractor and use the county's contract, usually allowing us to get much better pricing for the road projects. If the counties cannot move forward with contracting this session, we will lose our ability to reach out and double up with those same contractors, which will drive up the cost of our roads work, regardless of whether wetlands are involved or not. So there's a lot of issues there, you know, just that trickle-down approach of how things are working, and we cannot wait. We cannot lose another season. As is, we're barely breaking even on doing road maintenance. There's going to come a time where we have to start seriously upgrading these rural roads, making them wider, making them capable of handling 10, 12-ton standards as the farm equipment gets bigger, as other trucks become bigger. And if we don't have the proper procedures and funding in place for this mitigation, both now and into the future, none of that is going to be able to occur. So with that, I'll be happy to answer questions, but this bill is definitely a top priority.
Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to clarify because these projects obviously have been in the works for a long time. It's not like the projects themselves are emergencies. It's the point that we're at right now that seems to be the emergency. And so I'm wondering if where would we be as far as this being an emergency had we actually passed the bonding bill and had the bonding bill go through last year?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Becker Finn, the agency is probably a little bit more appropriate to answer that question, but I will take a cut at it. Last year's bonding bill had $5 million for this program. It probably would have carried them for a short time, but again, because this underfunding has gone over a number of bienniums, they would have become short on their wetland bank capacity in the individual bank service area, and maybe this wouldn't have happened right now, but it would have happened soon regardless, because they need more funding than that $5 million. As has been asked here, it's really $15 million to just address the needs over the next 2 years.
Representative Becker Finn.
So just to clarify, kind of the larger problem here is really the underfunding over time, not necessarily this policy change that happened more recently.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, just to make sure I understand this correctly, what we really need is $15 million because the 5 is the patch to get us to the 10. You're shaking your heads, yes. Okay. So what happens if we don't have a bonding bill this year, since this is only the patch?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, right now we need the patch, right now. Again, if we don't have this by the end of March by the end of February, mid-March, we likely are going to lose some, if not all, of these construction projects. But eventually, and hopefully by the end of this session, the $10 million is needed because of exactly the timeline that the agency staff indicated. It takes several years from when they get the money to when they construct the new wetlands to when it's revegetated to when it's functioning. So recapitalizing their wetlands banks with this $10 million is a critical piece. I think it can wait to later in the session, but from my perspective, it's important that it does occur by the conclusion of the session.
Representative Wagenius.
So now my understanding is if the bonding bill were not to pass, we would be here next year asking for a new patch.
Mr. Sewell.
Mr. Chair, I think we not only would be looking for a new patch, but that patch would be more difficult to obtain because more credits will have been all purchased by this year's patch without being able to start the process of constructing the new wetlands to create the new bank. And so now you're going to have a problem where we're going to run out of the ability to patch because there won't be the credits available if we don't do bonding. So it's you literally, you know, because you're kicking the can down the road, at some point we lose the point to kick because there's nothing left. So we've got to have the two-part system in order to fix now and then start replacing so we have something to draw from in the future years.
Thank you.
Representative Sundin, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, we know what it's going to cost us to fix this for a year or two, and we know we're going to do that today. We're going to move this forward today, but is there a wholesale policy change that we should be looking at so we're not back here 2 years from now looking for more money? We don't know where the money's coming from. If we're going to kick Grandma out of a nursing home to pay for this, or what's the deal? Should we be looking at a wholesale policy change? I'm going to ask both those testifiers yes or no, and if it's a yes, what do you have for ideas?
Mr. Sewell.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Dean, I'll go first. We have had a long-standing policy in our association of trying to look at where can we reduce the 2-to-1 back to 1-to-1, still trying to achieve the objectives, but without taking additional lands, particularly in the rural areas where we're getting hit with the credits being acquired in our areas because they're cheaper and there's the availability of the land to do it. But now that creates other problems. So we've been working with Representative Green on his legislation. If there's other options available to help reduce costs, we are certainly open to us negotiating and sitting at the table with strategizing on that, because I think you're correct. We're going to have issues long-term as well. Right now we need this to bridge us, to get us to a long-term policy change, but we'd be happy to have those conversations.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'll just add, these types of programs that require long-term or permanent funding are addressed in other areas of the budget, specifically the areas of education aids and local government aids. Those programs have what are called open and standing appropriations. So there is no requirement for those several programs that the legislature reappropriate the dollars for those every biennium. If you were to go to a system like that, then we would have some more assurance that this will be funded every biennium rather than having to come back here in every 2 years and pin our hopes on the recommendations and ultimate enactment of the bonding bill that simply has failed in meeting the funding obligation for this program for several biennials now.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Well, you know, I've got a working truck, and I seem to pick up a lot of nails all the time. And last time I went to get them patched, my maintenance guy said, you know, you've got a lot of patches on this tire. And eventually I had to buy some new tires. And you know, where there is a traditional lack of backing up the commitment with funding, but it's been exacerbated by last year's failure of not having a bonding bill. And so we're at this position, and I think the governor recognized that by asking for 5 and 10. So we have a little bit of capacity here, so we're not back here next year if all we do is get the $5 million. And, Mr. Chair, we talked on the floor, and I think at the last meeting, where does this $5 million come from? We don't know. Representative Sundin talked about nursing homes. I suppose it could come from education anywhere if it's general fund. And so the general taxpayers having to do the patch every time is not a good way to do business.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The issue of lining up with the federal government on the impact of less than 10,000 square feet, could you describe what you have in mind there in a little bit more detail.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Perkelson, basically has, again, the agency outlined, we have to meet two requirements when we have construction projects that impact wetlands. We have to meet the state requirements under WACA or possibly the public waters permitting system, and we have to meet the federal requirements. The federal requirements are a little bit more generous than the state requirements. I should make it clear there are some exemptions under state law that would apply to these projects absent the local road wetland replacement program. And those exemptions depends on the area of the state and the type of wetlands that we are talking about, but they range from a high of 10,000 square feet down to a low, I believe, of 1,000 square feet. Absent the local road wetland replacement program, we would, in fact, qualify for those. And the federal government has somewhat of a similar program under what's called the Regional General Permit. There's some disagreement between our engineers and the agency as to the extent of that, but at a minimum, it's 0.1 acres. And so basically we're saying during the period that the Wetlands Bank's credits are not available in the individual bank service areas, we would be exempt to the same extent that we are functionally exempt from the federal requirement until such time that the Wetlands Banks are up and running in each service area to meet the demand of them.
Representative Torkelson.
Just to make it clear then, so you're proposing a temporary alignment with federal requirements.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's correct. It only is in place until such time that all the bank service areas have wetlands banks up and functioning and providing credit.
Okay, thank you. Representative Fisher?
I've got a question or a little bit more of a concern. I would definitely see that we've got a serious need here that we have to address, but the thing that keeps coming back to my mind is where the money's coming from. I know that the governor's got a budget outlined and addresses those, whether it might be some increased fees. He's got things addressed in a sustainable way. The problem that we have is we don't know what is happening here, and that causes me a lot of angst. My regular job is I'm a CFO in a small nonprofit, and when I first came in, they had not done things in a real sustainable way, and as a result, the organization almost didn't make it. And this is some of the things I kind of feel here, is not knowing what the overall plan is going to be. It causes me concern. I don't feel that we're being very responsible in knowing how this is going to impact our other budgets and trying to figure out where we're going to. I don't know if we're going to have, are we going to have cut targets here, or is the money going to be appropriated and it's going to rob another fund? I just have some serious concerns along those lines, and was wondering if you can provide any guidance as to where things are going to go. I'm just trying to think of it from a fiscally responsible way, like we would do in business.
That's a question?
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. You know, what we're doing here is we're following the recommendations of the people who are on the ground doing this stuff, and we're trying to fast track this bill today so that we can get it out of here and get it to the floor and wherever it needs to go next. I believe it's Ways and Means. And, you know, me personally, I'm committed to solving this problem long term. And where that road takes us during this session, I don't know exactly where that is, Representative Fisher. But I do know and I recognize that this is a need, a critical need. And I look forward to working with you on it, okay? So the suggestion that you have, my door is always open, and most people have my cell phone number, and everyone has my email address. So come on up, and let's have a cup of coffee and talk about it. Representative Fisher.
And I appreciate that, Mr. Chair, that opportunity, but I also know it's going to have to be something that going to have to come from, I know, from people making decisions probably at a higher level than you're involved with, and I hope that we can have some advocacy so that we can make sure that we've got as good of a target as possible, make sure that we can address properly not just this issue but the other issues that are coming before us.
And to that point, Representative Fisher, I would say that I think that my leadership is always willing to listen to people, so make yourself available to them and express your concerns. Thank you. Representative Jones.
Thank you.
I know Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I know Clark too well.
Okay. I have this similar concern. I recognize the challenge we have with the emergency, and we need to deal with it. I agree with you on that completely. But it would be nice to have some sort of context of the magnitude of this. So my question is, what was the target in the last biennium for this committee? So assuming this, it feels like this would likely come out of this target. If it did, what would be the, what was the size of the target last time, so we can see the percentage of the magnitude of it?
I don't know what the target was off the top of my head, and I'm sure that we can find that, and we can talk about it another time. Yes.
Perhaps Mr. Hagemeyer would know?
He might.
Mr. Hagemeyer. Mr. Chair, I don't remember the target number off the top of my head exactly. I can try looking in here, probably just some of the expenditure numbers, though, for the current years that we're in, 16 and 17. The bill has it as a fiscal year 17 appropriation. So the money would be available immediately after it's enacted. When we're doing our targets, the current upcoming targets for the budget years would be fiscal years 18 and 19. So this could play into it. It might not. It would be up to the leadership, whoever decides the targets, how that would affect the target. But I can take a look and see if I have the actual target number here. It does change, though, because we have more things in our jurisdiction this time with exploring Minnesota tourism. So we have to compensate for that as well, but I'll take a look and see if I have it.
I just want to have it. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want a general scope of it. What was it spent in the last biennium from the general fund through legislation through this committee would give me that picture as well.
Mr. Chair, if I don't have it right in here, I'll get back to you.
Next, I'd like to have Mr. Myron come down from Washington County, Mr. West from Otterdale County, and then Don Arnosky will be on deck. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Hornstein.
Hi. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I had a similar question to Representative Johnson. But
really?
So just a comment. We've talked about different areas of the general fund where this may come from, but probably the first place you may look, Mr. Chair, is within our committee. And so I have concerns about, different agencies and others that might lose money as a result of this action. So I just wanted to say that. I know I agree with you, Mr. Chair, about the urgency, and I obviously support the concept here. It's just the funding and where we're going to, do the patch. And so that's why I getting that bonding bill going would be the ultimate solution to this. But if we're going to have to use the general fund, I worry about, the different areas of our own budget that may suffer as a result.
Thank you. Gentlemen. Oops. Representative Luick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got one major worry here, and we really need to move on this, and we can predict and procrastinate and be concerned about future costs. But let's just keep it simple, and I would hope we'd move along and not slow this thing down. We've got some folks here, I think, got some additional valuable information that needs to be provided to us. We all worry about future spending and bonding bills and those types of things. But I think we really need to slow down here on that kind of discussion and stay focused on the immediate problem.
Thank you. Gentlemen, proceed. Please identify yourselves for the record and who you represent.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Fran Miron, Commissioner from Washington County. I'm here to testify in support of House File 431 and 434. Washington County has many challenges in meeting the transportation needs of its citizens. First, we have extraordinary budget challenges like many other governments. And to meet those challenges, our county is one of 66 counties that have enacted local option taxes for transportation. However, even with these additional funds, we face shortfalls in maintaining our transportation system. Second, my commissioner district is wet. We have a lot of lakes and wetlands within our area, and it's very, very difficult to do a road project without impacting wetlands. And so certainly wetland replacement is a significant cost, and we're concerned with the policies that Bowser put into effect on December 2nd. Washington County is located in Wetland Bank Service Area 6, which along with Wetland Bank Service Area 4 were the first areas of the state where Bowser will not meet the state's legal obligation to replace the wetlands impacted by our existing road design or safety construction projects. We have no other dollars to offset the loss of the state paid wetland credits. We set our levy long before Bowser gave notice of its policy change in November, and we cannot legally raise that. We have construction projects in our capital investment program which will impact wetlands. We have to spend highway dollars on replacement costs, limiting the projects we have planned. Our capital improvement plan goes out 5 years. So, you know, as we set our plan and we budget for that plan out for those years, certainly this is going to have on-bearing costs to the county that we need to consider. This means the dollars these projects would have injected into the local economy won't happen. It'll mean no contracts for our private contractors, no wages for their employees. I can't tell you the entire effects of the loss of the state-funded and administered local wetland replacement program. However, I do think it's worthy to mention that this is exactly the type of state-local partnership that the state should be encouraging. Because the state, through Bowser, develops multiple wetland banks across the state, they've developed an expertise to create quality wetlands. The regional approach allows for expanded wetlands of higher values and use. Further, they save local governments from the administrative burden of dealing with the federal wetland regulations administered by the Corps of Engineers. It's really streamlined a cumbersome process for us by relieving the affected local governments from having to get two or three separate programs. And certainly the wetland banking service areas that have been talked about are significant to us as well. I happen to live in the Rice Creek Watershed District, which encompasses Ramsey, Washington, and Anoka County. Now, Anoka County is in a separate wetland banking district, and yet, as a taxpayer to the Watershed District was instrumental in creating wetland banking credits using general fund revenue, taxes that I paid in, to create wetlands in a banking area that I don't have access to. So it's just an interesting situation that we're dealing with. There are credits out there that have been created that we're not currently able to use. I'd last like to emphasize that as a representative of the state's counties that administers the state's health and human services and correction program and is subject to numerous environmental regulations that we either have to comply with or administer on behalf of the staff state, that we are very sensitive to unfunded mandates, of which we have many. I believe you and I share similar values and believe a deal is a deal. When the state agreed to put in place the local wetland replacement program in 1996, it's been mentioned earlier, over 20 years, 21 years ago, and assumed the wetland replacement costs for existing road construction projects, local governments agreed to continue to pay the tab for wetland replacement on our new roads and lane expansions that was mentioned earlier. We also gave up a half-acre exemption from the Wetland Conservation Act for design and safety improvements to existing roads. We've held up our side of the bargain, and now we respectfully request that the state meet theirs.
Thank you, Mr. Myron. Mr. West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Rick West. I'm the Public Works Director and County Engineer for Otter Tail County. And thank you for the opportunity this morning to testify. First, I'd like to take you back to pre-1996 when we as counties were mitigating our wetland impacts via individual projects, meaning that we were widening out existing wetlands as we were doing reconstruction projects in the interest of safety. This was a cumbersome process. It was not very efficient. And secondly, and probably of equal importance, at that time, those wetlands were not what I would term a quality replacement as we are doing today. As we move forward over the past 20 years and we looked at where we've come since that time, I would say that the local road wetland replacement program has been an efficient program and has certainly streamlined, from our perspective, the process of wetland mitigation on local projects, whether it be county, city, or township. As we are here today, Otter Tail County has two projects that are proposed for 2017, both certainly reconstruction projects with wetland impacts. We have one in our northeastern corner of our county, which is along the west side of Pelican Lake. The value of that project is about $5 million. And at this point in time, we have a bid opening scheduled for February 15th. We have a 30-day hold on the bids to consider. So with that project, our permits are in hand. All of those have been acquired. However, the wetland impacts have not been mitigated. We are in Bank Service Area 4. So there's none available. Our cost to go out on the market to purchase wetlands will run us about $250,000. That we did not budget for 2017. The second project, I should back up a second, with the nine project, an option not to proceed is not available to us to consider. We have a lot of utility relocations to do. And those folks, utility companies, have hired their contractors, their materials on hand. So we are going to have to go into our budget and find out or how we can find $250,000. Mm-hmm. Our second project is just north of Fergus Falls. It's about 4 miles in length, estimated value of about $4 million. That one we will not proceed on for 2017 due to the situation with the wetland bank. The effects of this, there's a large effect to our local contractors, our regional contractors. This is large volume work, reference our transportation plan. And it also, I think, affects, I don't know what the right words here, our goodwill to our citizens that are expecting this work to be done, particularly the County 27 project. Been looking forward to it for a number of years, and we will not be able to make good on that commitment in our plan. Our drop dead date for the 27 project would be about March 15th. If there isn't some temporary funding that comes into play or an option for Bowser to go back to the way they were operating, where they were actually borrowing credits from a bank service area that had credits to an area that did not. So for that second project, that March 15th is... as we said before, is kind of where we're at with the drop dead on the second project. In concluding, Mr. Chair, committee members, I want to thank Representative Fabian and Representative Norris for authoring the legislation in House File 431 and 434. And at our county board meeting Tuesday of this week, our county board wanted to convey to this committee, Mr. Chair, that our county board is full support of this legislation, and that it is very important for Otter Tail County. With that, I'll close, and thank you, and stand for questions.
Thank you, both gentlemen, not just for testifying, but for the good work that you do. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In district official memory, if you will, what county are you from?
I'm with Otter Tail County.
Otter Tail County.
Representative Sundin.
Just thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just reaching into another Band-Aid box here. We passed legislation a couple years ago that allowed counties to have a half-cent sales tax, I believe it was, half-cent. Does Otter Tail County participate in that?
Mr. West.
Mr. Chair, Representative, Otter Tail County, as the beginning of 2016, put into place the half-local option sales tax for transportation at a half a cent. We've also put in a $10 wheelage fee, which is also put into effect at the beginning of 2016. Given those two additional revenue sources, with our long-range transportation plan, which we spent 3 years developing, given the additional funds that those two sources provide, we are still, on an annual basis, short $7.5 million.
Representative Sundin.
I think that just makes the point we're running out of Band-Aids.
Thank you. Gentlemen, thank you for... Whoops, I'm sorry, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Myron, good to see you again.
I think your testimony is good. This might be off a little bit. I don't think Bowser's the bad guy here. I think they're doing what they can, and they had to make a policy with limited money, and it goes back to not having the money, and the money didn't come because we didn't get a bonding bill. So we're in the position of cleaning up the mess that happened, and it's a difficult situation, but it's not Bowser, I think, is trying to manage with a rapidly decreasing pot of money, because it was zero money that came in last year because of the failure of the bonding bill.
Mr. Yes. Chair, Representative Myron, I certainly understand that. We appreciate Bowser's support of this. I think the point I was trying to make is that, you know, we as counties have unfunded mandates, significant unfunded mandates in the way of health and human services and other areas, and yet I think there's an expectation that we still do our work and we still do our job, and that falls on to the burden of the taxpayers, the property taxpayers within the county. And obviously there's only so much we can lift with the property tax dollars that we collect within Washington County. And as I indicated, those levies were set prior to us even getting notice. So now I understand the unfortunate situation that Bowser is in here.
Thank you. Gentlemen, thank you both. Appreciate your good
work. Thank you for the opportunity.
Mr. Arnosky, please come to the table. Oops, I'm sorry. I missed somebody. Becker Finn. I'm sorry. Gentlemen, you may have a question here.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess more of a comment. I wanted to thank you for coming in. It's important for us to remember that it is the local communities that are having to deal with these emergencies that we're creating. And so I just wanted to kind of put it out there that what makes it an unfunded mandate is us failing to do our jobs and get these things funded. And as much as we would like to keep it simple and just focus on the, you know, each individual fire that we need to put out, it would be much better for us to be looking longer term so that we can prevent these kinds of situations from happening in the future. So thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, we appreciate your leadership on this issue. We understand what you're trying to do. We appreciate your understanding of the urgency and look forward to working with you.
You know we understand that. Thank you. Mr. Arnosky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is Don Arnosky. I represent the Isaac Walton League here in the state, and I think it's fair to say some of the comments I'm going to be offering are shared broadly with many, many conservation organizations. So much to say, so little time. Mr. Chairman asked me to keep it short, and I will. I want to say this program has been one of those stellar partnerships between state and local government for two decades. It's functioned well. There's one responsibility of the legislature, that's to provide the funding to Bowser to take care of the obligation for wetland replacement. And we've heard from local road authorities, and I am sympathetic to their concerns that right now all the slack's been taken out of the system, and it's no fault of Bowser's that they've had to say we're out of credit, we don't have the funds. I'm here to testify. I originally came to testify in favor of House File 431, which was a bill that proposed to completely fix the problem. $5 million in cash right now, $10 million in bonding. And then I really appreciate the suggestion that Mr. Carlson had about perhaps an open and standing appropriation. When you have a part of government that's working, a partnership between state and local government has been proven for 20 years, maybe it makes sense to do that. Speaking again for my membership, and I know some of you see me frequently, but I'm trying to represent the people who are not here, members of my organization. It's all the people's money. It doesn't really matter which pot it comes out of, right? All the money is taxpayer dollars, one way or another. And I think the people of the state have proven over and over again that they value our natural resources. We voted tax increases on ourselves in the face of a crashing economy. That's a message that I hope to get through to the Environment Committee here. Please step up, protect our wetlands. This has been a program that's been doing a good job of it. We do oppose Section 1 of the bill, which is a temporary rollback of policy to the minimal federal standards. 25 years ago, this state passed a state wetland conservation law because we are a watery state. We are a wetlands, lakes, and rivers state. We understand our economy, our lifestyle. Everything depends on protecting that. And the Wetland Conservation Act is a state expression of raising the bar in places where we feel the federal law doesn't do the job. So it is the failure of government over multiple legislators to adequately fund this program that puts us in this position right now. And I hope that you can demonstrate that there's a will to govern. I know of no person who opposes, no organization who opposes funding this program. And so what I would ask you to do is fully fund it. Put the Band-Aid in place, the $5 million, and put the intermediate term fix, which is the $10 million bonding fix, and be bold and go ahead and do it and ask everybody to say, this doesn't mean this has to be the massive bonding bill. This is one piece of government that works. Can we show that we can fund it? You could pass this next week. And we know the governor would sign it because he's put it in his budget. And I'm not sure who you would be waiting to negotiate with, because in the Senate you've had a similar conversation. Finally, a couple of discussions. People talk about de minimis and that we're only talking about a tenth of an acre here, a tenth of an acre there. What I remind you is that those de minimis, those wetland losses that will not be replaced, are multiplied by tens and hundreds of projects, perhaps even thousands. I understand there's a pent-up desire to do a lot of road replacement and repair, and perhaps this legislature will get to funding that. So the wetland losses are not the small numbers that you hear, but multiplied by a much larger figure. Finally, the last point I'd like to make is that every area of the state has a need for wetland protection, and even strategic restoration, even Representative Eklund's district. And by that, I would mean local water plans often call for very specific wetland protection or restoration, often having to do with downstream flooding or water storage needs. And if we can be smart and work our replacements in a manner that benefit and clearly are identified by local water plans, I think everybody can be happy with the work that we're doing. So thank you for the opportunity to testify. We do urge that you fully fund this program and move it very rapidly.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe following up on Mr. Arnasi's question, if we could have someone from Bowser clarify or at least talk about the difference on the bill on lines 1.15 and 1.16, 1.17, and the lines on the DE2 of 1.13, 1.14, and 1.15, just to drill down on that, Mr. Chair, in response to Mr. Arnasti's comments.
Sure. Mr. Wyrens, or Commissioner Wyrens, excuse me, Director. I'll get it right. Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, if you would please repeat your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wyrens, if you look on the bill 434 on lines 1.15, 1.16, 1.17, and then you look at the DE2 on 1.13, 1.14, 1.15, if you could explain that difference. I know that there were the agency and the interests were meeting, and so there was a modification in developing the DE2. If you could say what that means, what that modification means from the bill on this question of de minimis, 1.15, 1.16, 1.17 in the bill, in contrast with the DE2 that's in front of us.
Director.
Mr. Chair, Representative, so I'll start with the first part, and maybe Director Wyrens can pitch in here and answer your question. Part of it was a technical adjustment because technically the Army Corps of Engineers does not provide exemption. They provide for mitigation. So if they issue a GP, a general permit, that general permit has to say whether or not mitigation is required. So there isn't this automatic exemption that happens. So that was the 1.13 through 1.17, that's what the technical change is in the DE2. Mr. Irons, anything?
No, I want something to add, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hansen? We're good. Okay. Any further discussion for the bill? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do have an amendment, if that would be, now would be the time.
That would be a good time.
I would move the A1 amendment to bring the funding for the bill into the governor's recommendation and to bring bonding in front of us as well. Mr. Chair, the usual process is that bonding bills go through the committees, and this legislature has already, the House has passed a bonding bill already. This $10 million here is what the governor recommended for long-term funding so that you can build the banks that we can use in the future. If we're going to be moving a bill forward, at least we know that bonding, where bonding comes from. And I think the concern of our committee is that, or our side of our committee, is that when we get into spending general fund dollars, that the record isn't very good. The record is that I think maybe last year the target was, or last spending was a 33% cut target. And to meet that, then there were dollars that were raided from funds, or there were fees that were proposed, or there were general fund projects that were cut. So we're very concerned as we move forward here. I think we recognize the need for the money, we recognize the need for complete money, and so I'd move the A1 amendment and ask for your consideration.
Thank you. Members, I would urge a no on the amendment. I recognize the urgency of all this. I think that one of the overriding messages that I've heard today and in the past couple of weeks is getting this expedited as quickly as possible, and I understand what you're wanting to do here, Representative Hansen, but quite frankly, I think it would not be in the best interest of the bill that I proposed to get that done quickly. Another day here, another day there, another stop at another committee, and drawn-out debate on bonding and the need for it or the non-need, depending upon different things. I just I really want to focus on the issue that our testifiers have talked about, and that's getting this construction season started now. And I think that we have plenty of time in the upcoming session to address the yet existing and I'll even call it critical need for the future. Thank you. Yep. Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair, I'd ask for a roll call on the amendment.
No problem.
I think we recognize the need. I also think when we're spending $5 million here and $10 million there, it's worth discussion. And that discussion could have occurred if we'd had a special session. It could have occurred last year when the bonding bill was dessert and saved until the end. But we didn't have it. We didn't have that discussion then. We wouldn't be in this mess right now if we'd passed that bill. So we need to fund the needs and to meet the commitments to the local governments.
Thank you. And to that point, I would say we did pass that bill. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. You took the words out of my mouth. As everyone in here knows, we did pass that bonding bill off the House floor, and it was a good bill and supported by both sides of the aisle, messed up by action on the Senate side of this street, and, of course, failed in regular session. We had multiple opportunities to resurrect that in special session, but the governor's continued insistence on making it bigger and bigger made it impossible for him to see the value of the bill as it stood, and therefore nothing happened. But we did our work here in the House, and I would like to thank
my colleagues on the other side of the aisle for voting for it.
Thank you. With that, Representative Clark.
Just a quick question. Mr. Chairman, when you were referring to your bill, are you talking about the governor's bill that you're authoring, or are you talking about a different bill?
I'm talking about my bill that was before us. Before the
This bill, okay.
Okay.
Right. I wasn't sure because I thought you were referring to a different proposal. Okay.
Nope. Thank you. With that, the chair votes nay.
All right. Vice Chair Hinsman.
Nay.
Representative Hinson.
Yes.
Representative Backer.
No.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Yes.
Representative Bliss.
No.
Representative Karen Clark.
Yes.
Representative Tony Cornish.
No.
Representative Rob Eklund.
Yes.
Representative Fisher.
Yes.
Representative Green.
No.
Representative Hoppe.
No.
Representative Hornstein.
Yes.
Representative Brian Johnson.
No.
Representative Clark Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Lehman.
No.
Representative Lewick.
No.
Representative Metza is absent. Representative Neuberger.
No.
Representative Sundin.
Yes.
Representative Swierczynski.
No.
Representative Torkelson.
No.
Representative Uglin.
No.
Representative Borgenius.
Yes.
There being 14 nays and 9 ayes, the amendment is not adopted. To the bill. Members, with that, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome.
I'm disappointed this didn't go on, but I'm going to vote for the bill. And I just wanted to make a general observation. I was pleased comments on both sides of the aisle that this is an area where environment and transportation kind of overlap a little bit.
Intersect,
as it is, as it were. And I appreciated the urgency that we feel about getting these projects done, before the construction season in 2017. And I hope you'll join Representative Torkelson and I as we try to put together and make this the year that we have a good overall comprehensive transportation bill, because the same principle applies, which is these infrastructure projects don't go away, they just get more expensive. And so, the longer we put these bigger projects off, the more expensive it'll get. So I'm voting for this in that spirit, and I hope we can come together.
Well, Representative Hornstein, I love your good spirit. Thank you. So with that, I would like to renew my motion to re-refer House File 434 as amended to Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The bill is on to Ways and Means. Thank you, members. All right. Let the fun begin. Be in our budget. Commissioner. Ms. Ulick, it's good to see you again, too. Thank you for being here. Commissioner Landwehr, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
You're welcome.
Tom Landwehr, Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources, always glad to provide some fun for your committee, Mr. Chairman. And is that not on? Is that...
It's a little noisy in here right now. Can you just wait just a second, please, Commissioner? I can't believe everybody doesn't want to stick around to hear you.
Why can't you? I think they're reloading, Mr. Chairman.
All right, proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members.
Identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members, Tom Landwehr, Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources, and with me today is our Chief Financial Officer, Ms. Barb Julek. Mr. Chairman, members, I'm going to provide some opening comments on our budget proposal and then turn it over to Ms. Julek to provide the details. As soon as we get a presentation up here, you'll have something to look at. Mr. Chairman, members, I can begin while we're dealing with the computer here. Mr. Chairman, members, as I presented...
Commissioner, we do have a PowerPoint that we can work off of.
Okay, very good.
And with that, I'd like to interrupt you just real quickly. You told me when I visited you on Lake of the Woods when you were ice fishing that day and we took a picture of a couple of walleyes together, it was going to be your opening slide on your presentation, and I don't see that here.
Mr. Chair, it's on my smartphone. I can pass that around if you would...
Thank you.
Where did you get the walleye?
And Mr. Chair, members, I would observe that many of us will be heading up to Grand Rapids for the New
USA.
I'm
sorry, I was down a walleye hole there, so...
Forties.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members, just to open up, and slide number two is the one I'm looking at on your handout there. The mission of the Department of Natural Resources is threefold. We obviously conserve natural resources and think of plants and animals and vegetative communities. We also provide outdoor recreational opportunities, and those who take part in hunting and fishing or snowmobiling or staying at state parks understand that component of our mission. And thirdly, we provide raw materials that are the foundation for much economic activity in Minnesota, especially with respect to what we call the Three Keys, Timber, Tourism, Tacony. But specifically, we provide 30% of the forest raw materials that are used by the forest products industry. We obviously regulate and permit a substantial amount of mining in the state, both iron mining and potentially non-ferrous mining. And we work with water appropriation, so much of the business community needs water. We regulate the appropriations of that water. We monitor how groundwater supplies are faring, and we issue appropriations on groundwater. And tourism, as I mentioned, obviously is driven by hunting, fishing, camping, water recreation, and all of those economic opportunities are things that we provide. Mr. Chair, I'm going to slide to move to slide number three, if I could. Related to the proposal before you, the proposal reflects that in order to manage these resources in this mission, we in turn need resources. Again, to manage those resources such as fish and wildlife, state forests, state parks, waters, minerals, lands, and in particular to look at the products that we provide by those management dollars. Really extraordinary hunting and fishing opportunities in this state, not just in terms of the diversity of species that we can provide, but the populations, abundant populations, and in addition, the great public access that we have through those state public lands and state forests and so on. Mr. Chair, the state park and trail system draws 1 million users a year. We have really a top-notch state parks and trail system in the state. We have outstanding boating opportunities. The department manages over 1,500 public water accesses. We have 800,000 registered boats in the state. Extraordinary opportunities for ATV and snowmobile users. We have about 250,000 of both. And as we know, with respect to the Maine USA event this weekend, it draws people from the cities and from all over the state into these rural towns and communities to take advantage of the 21,000 miles of snowmobile trail that we have in this state. In addition, we really strive to maintain a healthy forest that can be productive both from the standpoint of wildlife and fish and recreational opportunities, but for providing raw materials to the timber products industry, as well as helping maintain a clean water, surface water system, result of which provides drinking water to cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, and a strong minerals management program. The range is enjoying a bit of a recovery in the iron mining sector, and we're working with those companies to ensure that the state can assist whenever possible to sustain those operations. Finally, Mr. Chair, I'd observe that the department's budget is about 83% fee-driven. So it is your boating fees, it's your hunting fees, it's your park pass, and 17% is general fund. The 83% coming from fees is largely created and supported by the users, and we always solicit their support before we come to you with any requests because we know their support is essential. I think traditionally the users do support those fee increases because they directly see the benefits that those provide in the statutory outcomes that department manages. I mentioned just briefly, because bonding has come up, that part of our job is to manage $2.8 billion worth of built assets. That's roads, bridges, water control structures, buildings, and a number of other things that the department manages. Slide number four, Mr. Chair, members. So this budget proposal that you have before you will help us continue just to deliver the services that we have traditionally provided the last few years. There's not a large increase in services proposed here. But part of the reason we have a budget increase is because we face many of the same challenges that other departments do, but challenges that many other departments don't face. Some that many face is that we have, of course, erosion of revenues by virtue of cost inflation, but we also have increased program responsibilities. So we have more aquatic invasive species, there are more trail miles that we have to manage, and so on. The fees, as I mentioned, benefit or provide revenue for a large part of the department's activities. Those have to be statutorily raised, so we have to come before you periodically to seek increases in those fees, and that's never an easy lift. The timing of our request for fees is awkward in that we can't solicit support from user groups until after the governor's budget has already come out, so oftentimes those fee proposals catch our user groups by surprise, and then we have to go and promote those. So it's a full-time job for many of our staff right now to inform the user groups why we have these fee increase proposals and what they're going to get from that. But the fee revenue is also impacted by things that are beyond our control, such as weather impacts. And we have a cold, wet summer like we did, I think, 2007. Our fishing license sales dip dramatically. When we don't have a lot of snow, our snowmobile registrations dip dramatically. So we have some of these issues as well that are beyond our control. The large benefit to having fees that diversifies our revenue sources, but at the same time, these are all statutorily dedicated. So they come from a specific source, they can be used for specific activities. If we have a balance in one fund but a deficit in others, we can't use those fees to deal with those shortfalls. And in some cases, we just are lacking a stable funding source. The last few years, we've gotten one-time funding, for instance, for our Division of Parks. That is very challenging to manage across multiple years, and it doesn't really allow us to maintain the services that we hope to provide to citizens. We have a very complex budget. We saw a little bit of that. You'll see more of that going forward. We have over 50 funds in the department, and much of that is dedicated, as I mentioned. There's a little flexibility with that. The majority of our budget is for boots on the ground. It's staff. We have about 2,700 full-time equivalent employees. That's about 4,000 actual people, team members. And whenever we have a budget deficit, when we anticipate a budget deficit, we have to reduce our service to Minnesotans by reducing our staffing. And finally, Mr. Chair, I mentioned that we have some unpredictable costs. When we run into litigation that's not anticipated, the costs of that litigation come out of the program that is the subject of that litigation, and that is not something we typically budget for. I will note that the legislature has provided specific funding the last couple of years to the department for some water-related litigation. We very much appreciate that and hope that your support for that will continue. Mr. Chair, page 5 really summarizes the situation we're in. Our funds operate much like a bank account, and so our water recreation account has dollars that come into it from our voter registration fees. And sometimes those fees are in excess of our expenses, so we build a balance in those funds. And so there is a period of time after we increase those fees that we can spend more money than we're making or spend less than we're making, but recognizing that at some point in the future, inflation is going to catch up with the program costs and the fund will go negative. You can see in the water recreation account that fund goes negative in about FY18. You can see all of these other accounts. Snowmobile account is essentially going in the negative right now. Game and fish, FY19. ATV, FY19. Cross country ski, 21. Invasive species, FY18. That means that the program is spending more than is currently coming in. Obviously, we can cut the program, and that's one of the things we'll talk about in a moment, but we're trying to maintain those services that we're providing. people. Before we go into the red, we start cutting the program. So if we see that we've got a FY19 situation where we're going to zero, we'll start cutting expenses in FY18. And Mr. Chair, to my point, we have and we continually look for cost efficiencies, ways of doing business differently, collaborating with others to reduce expenses. And here's three examples of how we do that. We consolidate, we close offices and operations that are no longer necessary or can be done otherwise. For example, in forestry, we've closed a number of our area forestry offices, combined those offices. We just closed the French River fish hatchery up on the North Shore. We will pick up some of the fish raising operations at another hatchery. This particular hatchery just was not efficient. 10% of the entire energy budget for the department was used at one hatchery. No longer made sense to operate that hatchery, and we're closing it. We have reduced and adjusted certain positions. For example, in our Parks and Trails Division, we have 66 state parks across the state. Over the years, we have consolidated the management, so we now will have one manager that's overseeing two or three parks and having assistant managers at those parks in order to reduce the number of staff members involved with that. And we've created some efficiencies, especially in vehicle use, by changing our fleet inventory. We have reduced our fuel used by 200,000 gallons per year. And fleet. And for instance, in our park system, we have gone to 100% reservable. All campsites are reservable now, so we reduce the need for people at contact stations when people first drive in to a state park. That's also had the unanticipated benefit of increasing the use of our parks. So we get more users because now people know that they can reserve a spot in advance. They know a campsite will be there when they get there. Mr. Chair, moving on to slide 7. But even with these efficiencies, even with these collaborations, we still find that we are going below the fund balance in some cases, so we're already anticipating some expenses that we have to reduce. And for instance, motorized trail maintenance, that need for trail maintenance is being reduced. And this snowmobile account is a good example. In anticipation of that account going negative, we've reduced the amount of grants that go out. For those that don't know, 21,000 miles of snowmobile trails in the state are managed largely by local clubs. They receive grants from the Department of Natural Resources to buy equipment, to pay for fuel, to do that trail maintenance. They provide volunteer assistance. It's a phenomenal program in place, but because of declining revenues, we're unable to provide them the level of funding that they need. We've eliminated some aquatic invasive species grants as that surcharge program has been dealing with inflation, and reduced some of the prevention activities, some of the check stations at boat ramps. And finally, we've kept a number of number of positions vacant as funds have been short, and in particular our Division of Enforcement. We have about 185 uniformed officers out on the ground, but we're about 20 positions short right now because of budget shortfalls in that division. That represents an area about the size of Massachusetts and Rhode Island combined that is currently without an enforcement officer. And Mr. Chairman, it's just obviously absent the funding requests, we not only continue these vacancies and these service failures, but we will be having to look at additional options as well. Mr. Chair, my last slide is the next one, number 8. With your assistance, what we hope to provide with the budget before you is to continue to maintain, just a really top-notch park and trail system for today and going into the future. In 2016, we had 1 million park visitors. Each one of those visitors spends an estimated $24 outside the park, so it's a great economic driver. We think we have really world-class fishing and hunting experiences. We want to use those experiences to recruit new people coming into the sports of hunting and fishing. Hunting is a $700 million driver, economic driver in Minnesota. Fishing is a $2.4 billion driver in Minnesota. You may have seen the news release that Bassmasters, a national group that each year picks one of the best spots in the United States to host a fishing contest. Last year they picked Mille Lacs Lake, one of the best small fisheries in the world. They have said they're going to do it again this year in Minnesota on Mille Lacs Lake because the fishing is so good. So in spite of some of the negative things about the fish population in Mille Lacs, it is still a world-class fishery. We will continue to maintain a healthy, diverse forest. About 30% of the timber that's used in the state for forest products comes from state land. But in addition to the timber that is provided, those are the areas where we hunt, where we fish, where we generate clean water, and we provide habitat for a whole range of species that represent the biological diversity of Minnesota. Just from the state lands, about $8 billion of economic activity is generated, and that returns $150 million in state and local taxes, according to the forest products industry. And finally, we will continue to conserve the state's resources. Minnesotans are very passionate about our resources and our outdoor recreation opportunities. The team of staff at DNR is equally passionate about that. And, Mr. Chair, members, we look forward to working with you on our budget to continue to provide those services. Mr. Chair, members, I'm happy to take questions right now, but then I will turn it over to Ms. Jewett.
Thank you, Commissioner. There are a couple of people on the list here. Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. Great overview. One of the things back on slide 5, and this may be a question some of your ABLE staff folks may need to dig into, but that prediction on where these various accounts are going to run to zero or negative balance, particularly the ones for all-terrain vehicles, snowmobile account, water recreation account. Does this slide take into consideration the potential to lose the off-road gas tax funds that flow into that on an annual basis?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, no, this predicts going forward with essentially the same set of parameters that we've got today. So the same gas tax that's out there presumes the same level of registration going forward, presumes the same level of expenses going forward.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, you talked about the value of bringing people in and increasing outdoor recreation and using that for tourism. And I just noted that there's some large outdoor retailer show that goes on in Utah. It's like largest in the country. And Patagonia withdrew from that show, as well as other retailers, because of the state of Utah's anti-public land sentiment. And so I would encourage you and the governor to put in a call to that show, or to Patagonia, or to the other retailers, if we could attract something like that because of our strong support for outdoor recreation. I think it would be neat to bring that economic activity here.
Mr. Chair, members, I saw the same article. The Outdoor Retailers Association is seriously considering looking for another venue. It's a huge event that's been put on in Utah for years, and I had the same thought. I've not established a contact yet. I just saw the article yesterday, but I thought, what better place to demonstrate outdoor recreation than Minnesota any time of the year, even in the dead of winter? So, point taken, and we'll follow up on that.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Clark Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to pick up on your comment, too, about the value of this, of the resources that we, in the attraction to the state. And I'm thinking we have a workforce shortage in Minnesota. And so this fits with attracting people to move to Minnesota to fill the workforce needs. And so it's an extended value in that way. I just want to make the comment.
Mr. Chair, if I could just add a short comment to that. Absolutely, and when you look at what the city of Duluth is doing, they're clearly aiming towards sort of the millennials, providing that outdoor recreation opportunity. I think, frankly, that's why a lot of Minnesotans continue to live here, even though, you know, it gets cold and wet. And as I've traveled to other communities such as War Road, International Falls, and so on, where they have expressed a challenge getting workforce recruitment, encourage them to point out the opportunities we've got here, because that is very, very attractive to especially millennials and the workers of the future.
Thank you. Members, just one thing real quickly. Commissioner, on the all-terrain vehicle account, the numbers are going down, and we've talked about this before. In my area, obviously, ATVs are important, and DNR is closing some trail segments. It's so counterintuitive to what we're doing here. We need to address that. But to that point, okay. Members, I'm going to ask you to save your budget PowerPoint presentations. Keep that in your save folder in your file. Also, the governor's recommendations, that folder. Commissioner and Ms. Ulick, Tuesday, we're on the schedule again, so I look forward to seeing you then. Commissioner, I hope to see you in Grand Rapids at the Snowmobile event, and many other members there as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, members, and...